Hello, creeps. It's me, John Kassir, the voice of the Crypt Keeper. And thanks for listening to 8-Bit Geek.
Hey everyone, and welcome to 8-Bit Horror Fest with the 8-Bit Geek. This is it. This is the last movie we are reviewing for the year.
It was so much fun.
It was the last one we're ever reviewing ever, so thanks for tuning in. It was a lot of fun. See you next time.
See, Halloween.
Episode 200 coming in 2018.
No, I said this is the last review, not the last podcast, guys. Come on.
Oh.
Well, see you tomorrow then, guys.
Thank God, yeah.
So, you can always follow us, follow along with us, of course, on social media at the 8-Bit Geek. And everything that we've watched, you can see it and on Netflix for yourself. This was fun. I'm Jeremy.
Actually, wait, hang on. This movie you can't see on Netflix. I had to rent it on Vudu.
Every movie you can see on Netflix. My name's Jeremy.
But I'm Doug, but I'm pretty sure there's only like one movie that you could have actually watched on Netflix this whole time.
I'm Kevin. Hi. Yeah, no, I don't even think any of them worked on Netflix.
You know what? Let's just go ahead and we'll redo that. Be sure to follow along. You can follow along to all these movies, and you can find them on the internet.
There you go.
Yeah.
That's right. Now, the one you could watch on Netflix was the one before this.
Hush. Yeah.
Hush was on Netflix.
Oh, right. Okay.
And we're back with the lovely
Windress Cosplay, who's apparently throwing a spanner in the works by contradicting everything Jeremy says today.
Tis okay.
Welcome to the crowd. Trust me.
Yeah, that's what we do. So you're fitting right in.
Yeah.
Awesome. But it is worth a rent. It is $3. It's all of like $2 or $3 to rent on Vudu if you have to go that route. And honestly, actually, you can buy it for about $4 or $5. So I was just being really stingy and like didn't buy it. But you could buy it too and just have it forever.
Now, after watching it, do you regret your decision? Should you have bought it?
I think I actually should have bought it because it is a movie that I would like to show my friends who are also fans of horror movies and fans of sort of the tropes of horror films, you know, which again, here we are on a similar theme. You know, we watched Cabin in the Woods a few weeks back, mm-hmm. and this is a very similar concept in that these are people working the system of horror scenarios, right?
Mm-hmm.
In this movie. So I thought that was like, why? We seem to be interested in this sort of similar concept of stepping outside of the horror and analyzing it, which is cool.
Yeah. Well, I think it was Satire Cabin in the Woods. I think it was Cabin in the Woods that was what Kevin was like, oh man, this reminds me of Behind the Mask. Like, we should watch that. Yeah. And so, definitely.
Yeah, it's cool.
Very similar.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'm glad you guys all got to see it finally. Because, like I said, that was one of those movies we talked about it last week where I was like, all right, cool. I watched it. Now I have to show all my other friends. We're all gonna watch it in like groups. It was like I felt like I was a moderator at a focus group. I'm like, and what did you think of this film?
I have a quick question, Kevin. Did you actually watch this week though for this show?
Yes, I watched it this week. I watched it today. Go ahead, give me your fucking quizzes. Every time.
What kind of farm implements were put at the bottom of the chute outside the barn?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And how many apples were in the hopper?
I
don't even know. I don't know.
Approximately three. They were just really big Granny Smith apples.
Lucky guess.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed it, and it definitely started off pretty slow. Like I looked over at Doug. Doug and I got to watch this in the same room.
And,
Yay! We hung out.
We hung out.
Okay.
Yeah. We didn't hug out. We hung out.
Make out.
No.
It got close, but we didn't get there.
Because this is a totally romantic movie that I would make out to.
I mean, I did. I watched it alone, but I made what? Do.
I watched it alone.
I made out
to. Is that why we haven't seen any of your animals this podcast? Are they hiding in another room?
It's just an awkward experience. They just don't want to be a part of it.
I think it's fair to say it does start slow, but the thing is it doesn't start like a horror movie at all. It's sort of irreverent, and the guy seems like a joke, which I think makes it understandable as to why they're pursuing this documentary with him, because he's so kind of friendly and open that it just seems like, oh, he's not really serious about this, right? And, yeah. You know, and because, I don't know, I think the world that this takes place in is an interesting place because Mike Myers is real. Jason Voorhees is real. It's really happened. So they have that level of horror really happening to them in that world, and yet they're still treating it with a level of sort of, mysticism and fun. We think that Jason Voorhees is a fun concept because we know he's not real. Mm-hmm. But they know he's real, and yet they still treat him that way. So I thought that was kind of an interesting place to be, you know?
Yeah.
By
the way, did you guys notice the cameo at the beginning of Jason?
Yeah. Wait.
What?
Kane Hodder was – Kane Hodder.
Yeah, Kane Hodder. Sorry.
He was
going into Freddy's house.
He was the one at the beginning when he was, like, raking his lawn. And then the woman's like, hey, sir, can we ask you a question about blah, blah, blah? And he just kind of stops and just goes indoors.
Yeah.
And shuts the door. That's Kane Hodder.
I think he's on Elm Street.
Yeah, he's on.
I guess where that was.
Yeah, he's on. Yeah. He's in the. He's in the house that Freddy killed in.
Well, so, cool. Yeah.
Did anybody catch any other interesting little tidbits from the from horror films? Any other little? I saw something in the background, and I like jumped out of my seat and was like, duck, 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 duck. Did anyone catch anything?
It was when they were at the high school and they were watching the students. There were two girls in the background
with white dresses on.
Yeah,
jumping rope.
Together.
Jumping
rope. Playing on jump rope.
They were doing jump rope. They were doing the
Freddy's coming for you.
I didn't realize that's what they were doing. I mean, I noticed the two girls and I was like, that's kind of weird. Mm-hmm. But I didn't put two and two together.
Yeah, and then there is of the part where he's putting the makeup on close to the end, the song that's in the background that he's listening to is the same song that is like the final song in The Shining when they're like driving away. And also, Robert Englund's character's name of Doc Halloran is a combination of two names from The Shining: Doc, which is Danny's like nickname, and Halloran, Mr. Halloran, which is the groundskeeper or whatever for
nice.
And The Shining.
His character reminded me a lot of not Donald Sutherland.
Loomis?
Dr. Loomis. Yeah, mm-hmm. he was totally Dr. Loomis from the Halloween series, which was played by Donald Pleasance. There you go. That's
well, it makes sense because everything is, you know, everything that they explained is based off of the entire horror genre, like
the archetype figures, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. So let me ask, have you heard these terms before you ever saw this movie? Like, have you heard of that character being called an Ahab before? Is that term something they dubbed that archetypal character in the horror genre?
I've never heard of it.
I never heard Ahab. Yeah, I've never heard Ahab, but I knew Red Herring. I knew that one.
Okay, well, yeah, but that's kind of like that's outside of the horror genre in itself, what a red herring is. But like,
I mean, to be fair, the term Ahab, that I immediately knew what they meant when they said, you found your Ahab. I was like, I get it, you know? It's that obsessive character seeking the white whale, you know? And so, but I just thought to myself, is this like I thought, if there's any college students out there who's written their senior thesis on the genre of horror, are these terms that are actually used in sort of the critical analysis of horror, you know, by like maybe the academia universe? I don't know.
That's a good question. That's good. That's, yeah.
I mean, because we've also got the allegory of the shed and the closet being sacred places like the womb. Like, I had never thought about that.
I was dying.
Never thought about that.
That was so funny.
So funny.
I mean,
I feel like, I can't imagine that being real. Like, when you're writing this movie, like, oh, and it's going to represent, like, the womb where everyone's, you're innocent and all that stuff. I just feel like there was just like, what's
some
crazy...
But there is a rule about closets. I feel like there is a universally understood rule that if you're hiding in the closet, they walk past you. Like, that's how it always is. I didn't know it was because it was the womb, but...
Right.
And then how much of it...
But then going through the orchard or whatever, and like the...
Yeah. Like being a rebirth.
Being the birthing canal, like all that stuff. And then talking about grabbing a phallic, like, weapon.
Yeah.
Oh, see, now that one wasn't new to me at all, because I think most horror slasher films have sort of an aspect of male fantasy to them, in that it's always large, aggressive men stabbing women. And, I mean, there's a lot of imagery there that appeals to a sort of male dominance violation fantasy, you know? So, because it's a violation of your sense of security as well as a physical violation of your body. So I was like, yeah, I get it. Now, the concept of the virgin becoming the empowered female by grabbing the killer's phallic symbol, that was a little bit far.
That's what I'm talking about. Like, this is like how excited he gets by it. It's just like,
well, that was the whole point for him, right? Is that the whole reason he seemed to be doing it was to see the transformation of the virgin into an empowered.
But
survivor.
How about that fucking twist, though?
Yeah, Survivor Girl.
Oh my god!
How about the? Did you see the twist? Like, as soon as they went out to the van, and you were like, "Oh my god!" Like, why did it? Like,
wait, which time? Because like, I saw it coming. I mean, it didn't surprise me, because this is a man who deliberately spells out how he has planned every single scenario. He has meticulously thought out how every single person and every single factor is going to respond. I was like, there's no way that he did not account for the news crew turning on him. Like, I just knew it. And I figured out pretty early on that she was actually the Survivor Girl, long before I saw what's her name jumping up and down on that guy like a poker stick.
That was so great. She ain't no virgin no more.
Yeah. I think
I'm no virgin like I've ever seen.
Yeah.
I think I turned to Doug and I think I called it. I was like, she's the virgin. I said, I swear she's going to be the one.
Yes.
And, but still, it was brilliant. Fun to see the twist. Like, I was like, oh, fuck yeah. I was like, it was so good.
I love that it was brilliant, too, because he still sincerely gave them the option to drive away. He truly did. You know, he didn't force that scenario. They make that decision, or the virgin made the decision, really. You know, so he, once again, he knew her better than she knew herself, and he planned out the reactions accordingly.
Yeah.
So I thought that was kind of brilliant. I don't know. I was fascinated by their relationship. I kept writing, like, what a strange evolution, because it's obvious that she likes him.
Oh, yeah.
She likes Leslie, and the way she responds to him, and she sees it in herself, and she doesn't want to like him, you know, and she wants to be able to walk away, and she just can't. And so it's very interesting, you know. I don't know. And it's interesting, as soon as they stopped living in sort of a suspended disbelief that this is a joke and it couldn't possibly happen, and they turned the cameras off, all of that focus that was on Leslie originally is now on her.
Yeah.
That's how you know she actually becomes the protagonist. Like, it's an interesting rotation of the camera. I thought that was really elegantly done. So it was really cool. Taylor,
Going back to, you know, him giving them the choice of them leaving, it's really interesting, too, because once again, we come back to free will, which was all in Cabin in the Woods. You know, it had to be free will. They had to choose how they wanted to die. And it's cool that, like, you know, this whole thing, I mean, obviously this came out 2005, 2006, I believe.
Yeah, 2006, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So they were kind of ahead of the game on it. But it's cool. Like, I still love that all of these different horror movies, and they know the deal, like, where they're like, look, there is some kind of – there's rules to this. And – like, that's one of my favorite things about this film that drew me to it in the first place, was the whole thing of, like, talking about the rules. And, you know, one of my favorite moments in the movie is just still him when he's talking about cardio. He's like, oh, yeah, you need a lot of cardio. And he's talking about the whole, like, he's like, you think they're actually just walking the whole time when everyone's running away, and he's still doing the – and, you know, he's like, every time she turns her back, that's when you run. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Make it look like you're walking the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, and – I was fascinated by what's the old timer's name, other than being your
Eugene?
Very good friend.
Eugene.
Yeah. which I was like, oh, yay, Herschel, there he is.
Herschel without a beard, too. It's pre-beard.
Yeah. So I was very fascinated by him, and I was trying to figure out if the woman that married him was his Survivor Girl. I couldn't quite. Oh.
She said it at the end.
She said that she ran.
She said she
ran.
She was like, she said that she was like, but, I ran. I was the only one that got away.
Yeah.
And then she was like, and I forgot the next line, but I was under the assumption that she got away from him and she beat him.
Yeah.
That's kind of what I gathered from it too, but that's what it feels like.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it definitely has that feel to it, but I was curious. I was just curious as to what their story was because, you know, you have these big, everybody knows the legends of Jason Voorhees, Mike Myers and stuff, and you don't know this guy. And the documentary people clearly don't know him, and they've done research on it, and it's like, who is this one, and how did he fly under the radar?
Yeah.
You know, and he does talk about how he didn't turn it into an art. He's talking about how they turned it into an art form, which I thought was cool. You know, mm-hmm. talking about mass murder as a career, you know, mm-hmm. and sort of an art style, which I thought was really cool. But yeah, I know one of the best parts in this movie too, I think, is that, you know, she crushes his head. Spoilers. She crushes his head in an apple cider, you know, and then she sets the thing on fire, and she's setting it on fire, and I'm thinking, girl, he gave you everything you need to know. He told you that he put flame retardant makeup uh-huh. on his face. Uh-huh. Why do you think that's going to kill her? Like, I'm sorry, but he gave her everything she needed to figure this out way before, and she walked right into it anyway. Like, yeah. she really yeah. did. And that's what I kept, and I got to that point where, in like you do in every horror movie, you're like, what are you doing? He's given you everything you need to yeah. know, and you are still flying right into danger, you know? So that was elegantly played, I think. But it's funny because it ends up not being at all like the typical horror movie, because he's taken it to another level where he makes it meta, where he brings people in, makes them complicit in his plans, and then turns it around on them and puts yeah. them into the game, makes them part of the victims.
And I love when they realize that too, when they're like, we're part of this now, you know, yeah. and it was amazing. And I love, from a filming aspect, I love how 3/4 of the movie is filmed like documentary style camcorder. But then uh-huh. when it comes down to them putting the film away, then it turns into a real movie. Like, yeah. I love that transition, you know, like it was pretty amazing.
It was really obvious too, because that's the first time music kicks in the background too.
Yep.
Yeah. Everything changes because it goes from like the steady, like not even steady cam, the handy cam sort of look, and then like all these like crane shots and stuff. Because you see it at the very beginning of the movie when you're watching the girl outside of the diner, and then you see that again later from their point of view.
Mm-hmm.
But then there's also the scene in the library where it like he's like, all right, let's do this, and then it's like movie time, and like you're like watching it actually play out.
Yeah,
and then it cuts to them afterwards where they're like running out of the building, like oh shit, like holy crap, did that work? Did you see him show up? Oh crap, like, you know, I really enjoyed that too, because it was fun for him to like in that moment also like lay out like, oh man, if everything goes to plan, which it rarely ever does, like she'll find this, then they'll find this, and then the old lady will say like this, and then you're watching mm-hmm. and you're like, motherfucker, she said those exact words.
Yeah.
Which, of course, let's take a moment and be like, oh, right, it's that lady. It's the lady from Poltergeist. Whose name I
Zelda
don't know.
Zelda Rubenstein.
Yeah. I was like, Carolee. That's what I immediately
said. That's what I was talking about last week. I was so hyped about it because I loved her, yeah.
Jared was like, mm-hmm. when she started talking, he's like, yeah.
It's her.
Yeah.
So although, I will say that one moment there, I felt a little bit pushed out of the moment because no human being sits around and gives that much exposition about background like that. Like, I was like, okay, this is not real right now.
It was
now.
So creepy the way she was explaining it. But then again, it's her voice.
Yeah. Say, her voice does a great job of setting the tone.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah. No,
I'm so glad she was in this. I think this was actually one of her last films before she passed.
Actually, it's like, it is her last film.
Yeah.
Wow.
But that's another thing about this film is like, and it was very, very... I wouldn't say shoestring budget, but it was an independent movie for the most part. Yet they were able to get so many horror icons in it, and you know, this is obviously before, you know, the character Eugene. It was before Scott Wilson got really big with Walking Dead, but it's still you go back to it and you see, you know, you've got Kane Hodder, you've got Robert Englund, you have Zelda Rubenstein, like I said, Scott Wilson now. Then there's just all kinds of like little horror things, and it's like, that's amazing that an independent movie was able to pull this many people in. So
I didn't realize that was Kane Hodder that was the autopsy guy. That's awesome. Mm-hmm. That was great. By the way, can we talk about how the credits alone are their own little mini suspenseful movie? Because you're sitting there like, I know this guy's going to sit up.
I know this dead body's going to.
And you're just sitting there watching trying to watch around the credits. Like, yeah. Get out of the way, credits. I have to see.
And then it keeps flashing off and coming back on. And like, you know, like the noise is just like, fuck. And then he sat up.
Yeah, because we watched it, and my buddy Ed that we watched it with, like, the second the credits started rolling, he was like, "Oh, quit!" And I was like, "Oh no, sir!
Yeah.
It's not over yet. Hold on, I'll pull that back up. Yeah. You not finished."
I really liked how Leslie told them. So he explains everything that's going to happen, and walks them through the entire thing, and says, "At this point." They're going to go to the car. At this point, they're going to run into the barn. At this point, the virgin's going to run to try to get into the tool shed. And right. then, even though they knew that, they still did the exact same thing at the exact same time that he told them it would happen. And to me, I was just like, even with that knowledge, like when they ran up in the ladder in the barn, and then nothing was up there, like, oh shit, okay, well now he's off plan, like this isn't fucking happened, like they came back down and then went back up and then he was up there still, like it was so I was like oh, that's so good.
I would almost theorize that he told them that with that, not that wasn't the actual plan. His plan was that he would tell them the plan, and then he knew they would try to respond to the plan preemptively, and so his actual plan was to respond to that. Like I think he deliberately did that, you know, because he had from day one.
Oh yeah.
Taylor says that he found her before she found him, which we don't necessarily know how they came to connect with Leslie originally and discover that he was planning to perform a mass murder.
Maybe the same way he did to the high school girl. Like, he set things up. I mean, that could have been what it was. I mean, obviously, this is something that we have, you know, it wasn't told in the story. But the way he meticulously set things up, he probably did the same thing to her. She was his original Ahab.
Yeah. That's fair. Yeah, I mean, I feel like an Ahab has to have a truly – has been scarred by a previous experience and must have a death wish almost. Mm-hmm. Like, I think that's the – so I don't know that she counts as an Ahab. But maybe she fancies herself to be one.
Yeah.
Like he said something. I remember him talking about it was his destiny. He chose the role as a divine counterbalance to what is good in the world. Like, he feels that is his purpose in life. And then he says to Taylor, and you chose journalism. So I don't know. I feel that maybe he thought she was divinely meant to be a part of what he was doing. But I do think it's interesting that he considers himself a divine force that will balance the scales of good and evil, because that balance must exist. You know, I thought that was really cool.
I want to know a little bit more about his backstory, because they like, you learn that his backstory is fake. Like, it's not, he's not Leslie Vernon. He's Leslie whatever from Reno, Nevada. And like, that's where Doc Halloran is from also. But you don't know anything else. But why? Yeah, like, what actually happened to you, like, that made you have to see him? And then at what point were you like, oh, I'm going to be like one of these guys? Like, I want to know a little bit more about that. Like, and then, like, obviously they're not going to make a sequel now. Probably. I feel like it's been, like, 8 years or more. Mm-hmm. 10 years. Shit, 10 years. Like, I don't know.
But if you did know that, though, wouldn't it take away from the mystique of who he is? Like, it would reduce the impact of him existing as he is now, you know, just sort of.
If you learned it too early in the movie, but there's still that part of me that wants to know that story. Like, I will still want to know what his actual origin story is, because it's like they introduced that whole concept that it's like, well, he's not who he seems to be. Okay, but right. why? Like, who is he?
And it's interesting because at the end, Doc says that he's just a man, because Taylor asks, who is he? You know, and he's just a man, but that's patently not true now. Now he is a legend.
Because you watch him sit up
on that autopsy table, and you're like, no, this guy's not a man anymore. I mean, he's actually made himself the equivalent of Jason, and you know, it's just, so now, then that's the point, though, right? Like, his history doesn't matter now. Now all that matters is the legend.
And, yeah, and he made it come true. Yeah.
Which, good for him.
I still love that conversation between him and Eugene, where he's like, and it's, I love the way Eugene is like, oh, you know, things are different ever since, you know, Mike and, you know, Jason. Like, he's naming them like he's on a first name basis with these killers. Like, they're all good friends. Like, there's some kind of like weird killer, like slasher union going on.
Oh, there's there's a bar they all go to.
Yeah. But I love
that would be a scary ass bar.
Once again, this is before I even know who Scott Wilson was. He stuck out in that movie so well because his acting and everything. But every moment that he was in, every scene that he was in was fantastic, especially when they had to cut up the carrots.
That's one of my favorite parts because it's just like you just hear the sound and then you're like, holy shit.
Yeah. Yeah. And like when, so he kills the first two victims up in the upstairs. And then he comes, what's the girl's name?
Taylor.
Taylor's freaking out, and I'm just like, he comes by and like grabs her by the face, and I'm just like, motherfucker, with those hands, you just murdered somebody, like two people. Yeah.
That's what she's thinking too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But up until that point, he's thinking that she's fully invested, that she's with him on it, mm-hmm. you know, and so he's celebrating. Right, because she was excited for him up until the moment that he did it, you know. So he stayed true to who he was. It's her that changed.
Yeah.
And,
oh man. So is there anything?
That's exactly. I mean, yeah. He laid out the groundwork mm-hmm. or the ground plans.
Yeah.
Is there anything that you guys didn't like about the film?
That it never made a sequel.
The one thing that I did not like is that some of those kids cannot act their way out of a paper bag.
Oh my God.
The stoners. I was like, God, we could have found better actors for this. Like, I mean,
man.
Yeah, it took me out of it a bit. Like, because I was all in the moment and I'm feeling the tension and then the terrible acting, and I was like, no.
All that told me is that
neither of those dudes have ever smoked weed in their life. Like, I mean, like, the actors who play them have never partaken in drugs because they clearly don't know what drugs
how
do.
How people on the weed, when they inject the marijuanas.
Yeah, when they inject the marijuana. With their marijuana needles.
They drop on of the Mary Janes.
Because they were retarded. Said, yeah. Like, they were so stoned, apparently, that they were just retarded. Like, that's how out of their fucking minds they were. And we commented on it last night, too. We're like,
this is terrible.
What are you smoking? Because...
As Ed's smoking.
I don't believe
like,
it.
I don't act like this.
Yeah, Ed's like, I'm not that dumb. I'm like, yeah, well, but...
it's close.
Oh.
Well, and let's just talk about it in a purely, like, scientific factor. Being stoned does not keep you from being aware of fear. Like, you sober up pretty fast if you are put in a situation where you feel you're in mortal danger. And those kids did not. So... if that was their version of being stoned. So, yeah, I wasn't buying that. So some of the acting was a little unfulfilling.
Mm-hmm.
But the main characters that mattered the most, meaning Leslie, Taylor, even the crew guys, good acting. Like, I felt their connection, and I was really interested. I was really fascinated by how Leslie and Taylor interacted from the beginning. They had their ups and downs. She violated one of his rules when she went into the diner and ran into Kelly.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it was very interesting to see. And there's that moment of violence you see from him when his plans are close to being derailed. You see there's a moment, there's a warning sign right there. He's dangerous. He could have hurt her in that moment, and he didn't. As many horror idiots do, they carried on right into the danger, you know? And so I think I can forgive the idiot, like, extras, basically. Like, the characters that don't matter that die immediately for not being good at acting.
You don't feel so bad for him. You're kind of on Leslie's side for that.
Yeah, they died. Well, you know, they couldn't act anyway, so it's fine.
Yeah. Let's pick out, what was your favorite parts? Anybody?
I just really liked Leslie, like, in every scene he was in, because he was this great, like, crazy, but like a likable crazy, where, I mean, and you can see even Taylor in the movie kind of like where, like, you're doing something batshit crazy, but you, like, you still want to follow him and watch it play out, even though you know you should be calling the fucking police. You're still like, but I want to see you do this because you're very likable, but
well, that's the
really batshit crazy.
That's the Manson charm thing going on right there. Manson was truly existed, right? And Charles Manson was insane, and the things that came out of his mouth were insane, but he was so charismatic that people just normalized to it and followed him right over the cliff, you know? So I think that's what it is with Leslie too, is he's very charismatic as a person. So yeah, I'm with you on that. That's cool.
Kevin?
For me, I mean, once again, I like that Leslie's character. He's so charismatic, and just like the little things he does, like I still love the where he's like, there was a quote I think toward the beginning of the movie where he's like going through the woods or something. He's like, "Oh, Paradise Lost, found it," you know, just stuff like that. Yeah. You know, I loved his character. As an actor, I would love to see him in more stuff, but apparently he just kind of just faded away after this.
Well, which sucked, we found out
he had like a next gen kind of Jim Carrey thing going on.
We found out where he went. He's still working in the industry.
Yeah, he's still doing in the industry, but like behind the scenes stuff. He's not really in front of the camera anymore. But it's
a lot
unfortunate
of like editing and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, and the interactions him and Scott Wilson and the wife had were fantastic. I loved it because they were so proud of him. He was like basically trying to like, I mean, they were obviously helping him, but they were just so proud of him when he was about to go on it, like. The trip they had right before he goes on the killing spree, it was like a weird like coming of age type thing, you know. They were just like, "We're so proud of you," or "We found your red herring," and they were so happy.
Yeah.
And by the way, we didn't even talk about how awesome Robert Englund was in this film.
Oh,
he played the greatest, like, you know, just kind of like doctor kind of deal, and he did the normal thing that every character like that in a horror movie acts like, where you think they die. Because he got stabbed a bunch of times and everything. And then just comes back at the end of the film to fucking help finish everything off, you know? It's awesome. Love that. Yeah. That's my favorite stuff.
Awesome. And let's see. Let's go ahead and I guess we can rate the movie. We can rate it out of 5. Does anybody have anything else they'd like to add before we do that?
I just want to say one little note about when Kevin mentioned the whole, like, the moment, which is so great, with Paradise Lost, and he pulls the book out of the shelf and he's sitting there. To me, in that moment, when you look back and think, that just seems so coincidental and cute and funny, but knowing that character, now that we've watched the movie and we know that everything that character does is deliberate. There is not a single thing that Leslie had did, I think, that entire time that wasn't planned, pre-planned, calculated and designed to get to the end goal. I feel like the brilliance of that moment isn't that it what just happened to be there. I think he planted it there and deliberately orchestrated that moment to endear himself to that crew, you know?
Yeah.
Like he's a true psychopath in that psychopaths are the most charming because they can wear any personality and any face. And I think that's what Leslie did, and that's kind of what I love. I don't know that I could pinpoint a single moment that I realized that, but it's all that layered on top when you realize this guy is a genius. He truly is, you know, and most dangerous kind because he has no remorse for any of his actions. So anyway, so that was a
side. And how even like just he like normalized some of the stuff that he was doing. So when they're like, "Oh, I've cut all the branches down and they'll fall and they'll die," or like all the stuff, he's like, you know, right? Like it's that kind of like, doesn't everything, duh, of course, is what I'm going to do. Like, if that's, I'm not an idiot. The crew's kind of like, oh.
Yeah, they're like, that doesn't seem fair. It seems like cheating. And he's like, I'm one guy against like 8 teenagers.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I'm a little outnumbered here. But it's just, how, like, to him, it was like, it all made, it was like, duh. Like, it was just like, of course,
you don't think about that. And, like, when you think of, you know, Jason, you don't think, oh, Jason was out there sawing off tree limbs or anything. You don't think he planned ahead that well, but it makes sense that he would.
Yeah, because everything falls apart, you know, when people are trying to run away.
Because the concept is that the murderer is just some sort of mindless monster, but that's clearly not the case. No. So
We see Jason in a basement, and he's just like, he's on his
CGI.
Computer.
Yeah.
Like,
oh, but that was so funny. Yeah. Most of what we do is CGI. Like,
yep.
So, all right. Let's get to scoring this bad boy. Kevin, what do you give it?
Come on. I'm the one who suggested this. Easy 5 out of 5.
Oh, man. I thought you were going to say a 3.
Perfect movie. 5 out of 7. There we go.
Doug.
I'm going to go a 4.5 out of 5. It's a little slow, but it's still a good movie, and I was glad to watch it again. But it is a little slow, so I can see, be like, oh, you got to watch this movie, and some people falling out. And like, it's like, man, I couldn't really get into it because it was kind of slow. But I loved it. I loved all the ties to all the other horror films and all that stuff. It was fun.
Yeah, I'm going to give it I'll give it a 4.0 out of 5. Same thing. Pretty slow in the beginning. I looked over at you, Doug, and I was like, And you were like, no, it picks up. It picks up. I was like, okay. yeah. And then the acting as well. So from the two, I mean, so that knocks it down a little bit. But overall, it was fun. It wasn't too scary. So, I mean, it was more, you look at it more like a documentary than anything. And so you see just how somebody's just a psychopath. Yeah. And so that was really cool. So I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, it also makes it a little less scary when, again, the killer has laid out everything you're about to see before you see it. So it makes it a little less. So when it cuts to the movie part of this movie, like, you're like, okay, I know what's going to happen, so I shouldn't be surprised by anything. And you're not, because you're like, you know exactly what's going to happen because he fucking told you.
Yeah. Wondrous. Well, and that's the thing where I think I'll have to do a 4.5 out of 5 stars because of that. Because if we're trying to, it's the same problem we had with some of the other movies, and that if you're trying to rate it based on its horror, it's not that horrifying. Like I didn't have the same response that I get to, let's say, a Jason movie or a Freddy Krueger movie. You know, there isn't that suspense because he has spelled everything out. It's more analytically scary. Because you are instead knowing what's going to happen and going, holy shit, this guy is brilliant. And that's terrifying on a different level, you know. But, you know, like you said, not really any jump scares, exactly. But still terrifying in its own way. Sort of a cool, twisted, different from any other kind of horror movie I've ever seen way. So 4.5 out of 5, I would say, just for that and for, bad stoner acting.
So awesome. Bad.
Go smoke some actual weed. Like,
seriously.
Yeah, somebody on set had to have some.
I'm sure.
Okay, awesome. Well, that's our episode, and that wraps up 8-Bit Horror Fest for 2016. We got some cool things coming up for 8-Bit. We can announce it here. 8-Bit Xmas is coming up, and Wintress is going to come back for that. Is that correct?
Yes, yay! I am. I'm really excited about it, too.
So we'll hit you up with that in December, but... thanks for following along all month long, and we'll do it again next year. I'm Jeremy.
Yeah.
And I'm Doug.
I'm Kevin.
And I'm Windress.
We'll see you next time.